Well, all right. If we could grab a seat, I want to make the most of our time. And I think it kind of shows that we go from 7:45 to 8:45. And so we still got a minute. That's fine. We'll just do some introductions. And I've got a great outline. I hope you were able to pick up the handout because, and it's filled in. I didn't do the whole fill in the blank thing because if we get onto a rabbit trail or we decide we want to talk about something and camp out on a certain spot on something that we're looking at tonight, that's fine. You'll have all the other notes and, you know, I'll give you my email and or cell if you want to connect later, that's fine too. But, you know, it's not so much important to me to go through my material. I want to talk about the details that are important to you. And so I'm going to scoot my table over some because y'all are all over here. So I'm going to join you, too. We are. Okay. So Tim will get to hear me saying scooting the table over. This is me and my family. My name's Peter. I think I got to meet everybody's there coming in except for Miss Brandy. Thank you for joining us. And my name's Peter Burmeister. I've been serving at First Pensacola on the team there for 4 years. I'm their executive pastor, so I get to help our team with the mission and vision that our pastor has set for us. Been in ministry since 2001, and so over the course of most of those years in education and doing a lot of adult education and students for a long time. So I know we have some next gen people in here, did college and student ministry for a while. Y'all both were next gen. You were median adults. Tomas, what grade are
you? 40s.
40s, median?
Yeah.
Singles in their 40s.
Like everything.
Everything. I love it. Okay, yeah. So, and then
Everything as well.
Okay, so awesome. So hopefully if there is something that speaks specifically to an age group or something, or you have a question, please just kind of get my attention a little bit. We'll pause and camp out. But you've got my notes there. And so it's not so important to me that we get through everything, but I do want to get to what you want to get to. So my family, me and Amy have been married for 18 years, and those are our two children. Maggie, she just turned 10 during snowpocalypse, so that will, to us in Pensacola. We had snowpocalypse last Tuesday. That was her birthday. And our hometown where we live, Milton, is now the snow capital of Florida. We got 10 inches of snow in like 8 hours, which was it was powdery. I mean, it felt like we were in Colorado. It was just wondrous. And so anyways, so we spent all day out in the snow for a couple of days. So the oldest there on the left is Maggie, and then the youngest there's Charlotte. And we have a bad little dog that's not in the picture named Boone. Boone's been with us for 12 years. So we've been there for 4, and this is our church, or the front of it. And so, kind of like Houston's First, we're a legacy downtown kind of church that's been in the community for a rather long time. We're celebrating our 177th year. I know that seems like a baby for y'all. I think y'all are 1837. We're like 1876 or something. But we're nestled in downtown Pensacola. Been there a long time. So let's jump into tonight. What we're going to be doing in this session is looking and casting a vision for movement. So empowering you as Life Bible Study leaders to look at it in really 3 separate phases. And you may be thinking, well, how do these phases come together? We're going to talk a little bit about that. The first phase is mapping a leadership pipeline. So talking about what you're doing in that director level or the level in which you're overseeing some leaders to kind of gain momentum. And then secondly, looking at minimalist event planning. Keyword there is minimalist. Just looking at how can we draw in what we're doing with that pipeline, okay? And then the third there is multiplying groups. And so looking at all 3, because as we're growing a pipeline, you have to have somewhere for the pipeline to go, right? You have to have some kind of actions and steps and events and gatherings. That's what kind of gives us those opportunities. But you also have to have opportunities for that growth to be received. And multiplication is part of that growth reception. So tonight, as we begin looking at mapping a leadership pipeline, my notes just went nuts. Let's think about this. So why does this matter, having a leadership pipeline? Why does it matter empowering other leaders and having others join you in the mission? Well, think about it like this. If you were the CEO of your own company, your own business, and you didn't have any middle management, so it was just you and frontline staff, wouldn't a lot of things gravitate to you? It'd start taking your direction and eyes off of what mattered in some cases. Sometimes it doesn't. CEO does need to step into some, speak into some things in a very direct way. But without middle management, without management underneath, and having a direct line in which things are happening and people can respond, there's a lot of day-to-day business that would entrap that person and keep them from really utilizing all of the opportunities. Some of y'all may be even feeling that today. Who went to work today? So you got up, you did your regular work session, you did all that, and then you're so bought in here at Houston's First that you said, I'm also going to give another 4 or 5 hours and go through 11 o'clock tonight on campus. Why? Because I want to grow as a leader. Okay, so let's think about this in Scripture. Okay, so in Scripture, we had this illustration with Moses. That's what was happening to Moses. He wasn't the CEO per se, but he's the leader of this nation of people that are wandering. And he is taking and sitting and giving rulings and opinion and decisions all day long. And his good father-in-law, Jethro, comes to him and says, there's a better way, Moses. You are running yourself to death. Does anybody feel like they're running themselves to death in their areas? I hear that Houston's First is a growing church. I mean, y'all got multi-site campuses. There's so much stuff going on. There's these sites in which they're doing ministry and missions. And then Life Bible Study is also growing. And if these features are growing, that means you guys are handling more than you probably ever had. And that can sometimes be overwhelming. I think that was for Moses as well. Even though Moses was a good leader, his leadership was being overrun. So Jethro says, hey, you need to find people you trust. You find people that you can place into a structure, nurture that structure, and you need to identify people and develop those leaders around that structure. And so we come up with this thing we call Jethro Principle. Who's kind of heard that before in church life? You know, this principle of, hey, I'm going to find John and Paul and Peter and some others. And you know what? John can't handle hundreds. But man, he's really good with the small groups of people. He's really good with welcoming, small step sort of stuff. So I'm going to put him over these small things. Then you've got some leaders that have high capacity. And Moses found those as well, put them over hundreds and thousands. And so we see that in Scripture. Moses was then able to do what? He was able to lead, right? And so and as leaders, when we're looking down, we're not able to look up at the distance to see where we're going. We're looking at our feet. And so anyway, so in this particular moment, we see a leadership pipeline really does matter. We need to identify people that we look at. And the New Testament also talks about it this way. 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul instructs Timothy to pass on what he's learned to faithful men who will also teach others. We have to find people to walk beside us as leaders. If you're a director in the room right now, you may not always be the director. You know, there's been a lot of executive pastors that have been at First Pensacola before me. There'll be more executive pastors after me. There'll be other pastors. In fact, y'all are just like us. We have a pastor's wall of pictures too. You know what I'm talking about down there? Where they have all... There's a lot of pastors, right? There'll be another one that goes up on the wall after the current senior pastor, Greg. And I'm sure he's fine with it. Why? Because the kingdom is bigger than just the moment. And so we have to be preparing other leaders around us. Why? Because some of you in the room here, your capacity for leadership may be greater than just the directorship you're doing right now. But if you're not able to multiply yourself, you're not going to be able to see both your potential, but also enable the people around you. So key question here is, what's your vision for leadership in your department? Is there a pipeline in place or is it accidental? Because let me tell you, I don't know if you found this to be true or not, but I know that, and this is just a figure I'm going to throw out, but 2/3 of all my problems, I usually recruit on my own. I bring them right in the door and I give them leadership and I set it in place. When I make rush decisions with people, I usually recruit my own problems. Okay? But think about this. If there's a pipeline in place, I know the parameters of what I'm looking for. I know these need to be reliable people who will show up on time. They need to be people that see the core vision of what we're doing in our groups. They need to be people that understand the mission and vision. You see what I'm saying here? That they're in alignment. Those are people we bring in and they multiply what we're doing, right? They bring some structure around us. So let's look at six steps of a leadership pipeline. And I'm sure some of you guys have probably seen some of these in your... Who works kind of a more corporate job, day-to-day corporate job? Anybody? Oh, good. That's great. All right. So let's look at these. First is identify potential leaders. That's our first key step here. Look for faithfulness, availability, teachability. Who's ever heard that little acronym? That actually is FAT. You're looking for FAT people to come alongside you as potential leaders. You need people that can be faithful. They're going to show up. Even when snowpocalypse happens, you can count on them to show up. You know, that's the whole beauty of small groups. Your church is just like ours. There's people all the time that feel like, well, the church just doesn't connect with me, or I don't connect with the church. I don't feel like I have community. That's a key phrase of I'm not in a Bible study group. I'm not in a life Bible study group. And so that community ought to be what's built. So we have to have leaders that are faithful, because you're not going to build community around people that don't show up consistently. Availability. You know, all of us as leaders, we need to be able to be stretched some. You know, things happen. Times change, locations change, plans fall through. But also just the availability of, hey, you know, Susie and her family, they're going through a rough patch. Or, and that may be, you know, with the family, that may be with finances or just things. But as a community, you've learned about somebody in group. Y'all with NextGen, they're always on fire. Middle schoolers, high schoolers, young adults, there's always some fire that's brewing around them, okay? And so the availability there to have and give time, that's priceless to the people that are in your groups. Just being available one-on-one. And for you to do that multiplies what your staff's trying to do. Because your staff can't be there for everybody all the time. But man, when they're a part of a group and you have faithful and available leaders, it goes so far. The last point there, teachability. Wow. You know, there's so many people that I'm a big believer in interns and bringing in, people into residencies and those kind of pipelines. And because that's how I started. I did a 2-year internship when I was first starting in ministry, really just gave so much definition to how to do it and what it was going to look like. And also just started so much success in my life. And so I feel like that's always, but over the years, it just always made me so sad when I would see people that were just so talented, so brilliant, so smart, but they weren't teachable. They weren't able to learn or even submit to some things like what we talked about, you know, the alignment of the organization. And even just to see that, hey, we can't flip everything just on a dime. You know, we've got to take step A to go to step B to go to step C. And this is what we're trying to achieve. And that doesn't happen overnight. But there has to be some teachability to that leader to be able to say, to understand, okay, I don't see the horizon that you as a taller leader see, but I'm willing to be taught and understand. All right, second one here. Second step is to invite them into leadership. You know, the biblical thing here, Jesus invited Peter to step out of the boat in Matthew 14:29. Leaders grow when they're invited to take risks and come into what you're doing. The practical tip here is be intentional by inviting people into small roles like leading a prayer, organize a group event. You know, and that's what we're going to talk about with the events thing in just a second. But the piece I do want to just strain on this is when you're inviting someone to come be a part of what you're doing, be intentional. Don't just say, you know, Tomas, I need somebody to plug the fourth grade hole. Can you come and plug that hole for me? That's not personal. It doesn't indicate that I understand Tomas at all and what he can do to plug that hole. All that conveys is I need a warm body sitting in a class of fourth graders to achieve something that I need and to get off my list. What I need to do is go to Tomas and be like, man, you have such patience. You're a man of patience, and the ability you have with our children and our children's ministry, I think you need to step up and personalize it. Share with him why you think it is, and then share the why of why he ought to take it. You know, it's no one wants to just be a hole plugger. And no one, I mean, but people will do it though. We'll do it for Jesus and we'll do it for our church. But I'm telling you, if you will go to these individuals you want to try to recruit and ask to do more with you or for you, putting it in a framework of personalization goes so much further. Just so much further. And you understand what your people are going to need too. Be honest with them. Hey, fourth graders, Tomas, they're crazy, man. Like, they're starting to smell and they don't know it yet. And there's got, you know, their hormones are all over the place. They're hitting preteen, kind of, not really. But I think you can do it. You know, be honest. Because as soon as you're talking about them anyways, they already know kind of what is the ask, right?
Yeah, because otherwise they feel tricked.
Yeah. Yeah, get the expectations up front. You don't have to give everything in the hallway. That's another good thing, too, is maybe not as everybody's walking out of church is the best time to do that either. Okay? The ambush. Who's done the ambush? I'm guilty of it. The ambush. You see them coming down the hallway. You're like, ooh, I'm going to recruit that person. Don't do that either. Pray about it. Find time. Make it special. Think through how you and your personality would do it that works for you. And also think about how it's going to make it special for that person. The invitation. Train and equip. Train and equip. Moses mentored Joshua. Joshua learned leadership by observing and assisting. And then Joshua did what? He conquered the Holy Land, right? He crossed the river. He enacted everything at Jericho that he was taught, which was what? To rely on the Lord and follow the Lord's vision. Great victory. The next battle, Ai, didn't go so well because he forgot what he'd learned. But you train and equip these people that you're sending out. There's a lot of ways that you can do this. In fact, all the major studies, I think most everybody, do y'all all use Lifeway curriculum for the most part, like Bible Studies for Life or just exploring the Bible for your Bible study groups? Yes, no. What are y'all using?
We have teachers that lead our class.
I got you. So they're developing their stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I got you. So if you're doing Lifeway curriculum, each of those three main studies on their website, they have training tabs. And under those training tabs, they are actually posting from the people that wrote the curriculum how you can actually implement the lesson they wrote. And so you can do that for kids, children, children, students, and adults. They have that kind of delineated out. If you have teachers that are doing kind of their own studies, you know, there's YouTube videos and different things that you can give them. There's free subscriptions like Logos. Logos is a great app for Bible study. It has a lot of powerful tools that you can use in that. And so you start equipping around them. You know, another part of this is that model of the Moses and Joshua is, as you were doing things in your director role, if you're leading someone to be a future director, you need to take them with you. I mean, that's one of the things I do a lot with a lot of our interns. If I have a meeting, good or bad, I usually bring the interns with me. They don't talk. They don't really interact a whole lot. But what? They get to watch and listen and see what happens. They get to see how I react to that person that's just really bent out of shape about wall colors. Okay? You know, and then, or they get to see the mom that's just crying uncontrollably because we're helping them and their family. They see the good and bad and ugly, right? Why? Because that's what you need as a leader, right? Because leadership's not in isolation, and it's not just the good. It's the bad and everything else. But that's what really makes the good good, right? Is walking through those things. So some of the best that you can do as far as training and equipping these people that are with you is to be that hands-on learning and walking them with you. Anybody want to add to that? Because there's other things we can do there. Is there anything y'all are doing? All right. The fourth step there, empower them to lead. You know, I think one of the most aggravating things that as for me anyways, because I'm on the disc, I'm high D, I want to go, I want to get things done, is to be given a title or be given a position or be asked to lead and then not able to do what you've been asked to do. Okay, so if you're going to be bringing somebody into your leadership pipeline, if you've got leaders under you, let them do what you've asked them to do. You know, that means that sometimes it won't be done to the level of efficiency or accuracy or excellence that you would do it. And that will bring us to another step. But give them the opportunity to fail. Empower them. If they can't handle the empowerment to do what you've asked them to do, it's a great off-ramp. And going back to the invitation, that's actually a part of how I do my invitations. I usually say, hey, I'd love for you, remind me your name, Bo. Bo, I'd love for you to teach for me. We've had this conversation. I'm going to give you a 90-day window. All right? 90-day window, 60 days. We're going to come back and have a discussion. 90 days, we'll see what's going on. Why? Because I want you to have an off-ramp. I want me to have an off-ramp. It's not working out, Bo. You can't scream at people, man. You got to stop. Or you may come back and be like, man, something's just come up. I don't have the time to give it that I thought I did. Both sides need to have an off-ramp. And when you've empowered people to lead, you're going to give them the opportunity to have an off-ramp if they're not going to be able to do what you want. But also, it gives you the opportunity to evaluate, gives you the opportunity to do things you need to do. But they can't say you recruited them and then didn't enable them. And I don't know about you guys, but that's one of the worst places I think you can kind of get stuck in leadership life. Brings us to the next point with this. This goes hand in hand with the last one. Just as much as you empower them, you got to be willing to be honest and evaluate. Honestly evaluate and coach. Offer feedback and encouragement. As you're coming alongside your leaders, it's in the trenches in which they're working. It's also in the trenches in which you've got to start talking to them about what happened. What I mean by that is as you're coming out of heavy seasons of ministry or events like tonight, I'm sure Tim's going to sit his people down this coming week or whoever. I mean, we even got this survey up here that you'll do on me and tell me how great I did tonight. But the point is there's going to be an evaluation. Now, for me, I go back to my job in Pensacola, so my evaluation is what it is, okay? But the evaluation for the people here, that will drive the thought forward for next year, will drive the process, okay? So evaluation has to be done. Offer feedback and encouragement. But it has to be readily done, systematically done. How many of y'all work in a place where y'all get, like, annual reviews? Okay? We do this. I hate annual reviews. Why? Because I know I have supervisors that's the only time in which they're doing what they're supposed to been doing all year long, which is going in, have one-on-ones, talking about the set goals that they set for the year, and then evaluating quarterly the set goals that they said they were going to do. But some bosses wait till that end of the year. We can't do anything about it. You know, 9 months have passed. We're going to set a budget. 3 months from now, it's going to affect their pay. It's going to affect how we look at them as going forward. But if we had told Judy in January instead of March, because we're on a 10-1 budget, that, hey, you're not hitting the goals you set. You're not performing in these key areas. This is not good, Judy. That's a much different conversation here than there. And I'm talking about, you know, somebody's real world pay. But at the same time, you know, if you've got leaders, these monthly kind of opportunities, because what's going to happen for you guys with volunteers is if you're not willing to evaluate as it goes along, stuff's going to build up. It's going to build up, and then resentment can come in, and then there's going to be clashing of personalities that all could have kind of been put away if evaluations had happened consistently. Also, What I've always found is consistent evaluations also brings camaraderie. You know, if you're understanding, okay, man, that really hurt last night. We did not do our best, and you kind of look at it together. Why? Because it's not about you and them. It's about you and them together, right? It's not what they just did. It's about, because you're responsible for them too, right, as the leader. And so you empowered them. That also means you evaluate them. Why? Because they are your extension of your leadership. Let's keep plugging through here. Multiply leadership. And we talked about this a little beginning, just 1 Timothy 4:12. You got to multiply your leadership. Develop successors. Have successors in your life so that as you're transitioning, as you're transitioning to other things, you've got to be able to have successors that come alongside. So let's say this. If you stepped out of your role tonight, who in your part of the organization is going to backfill you tomorrow? The hard part of this is you don't want to be backfilled, right? Because you're doing what you do because you probably love it. That's probably why you showed up at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, is because you're bought in. So you don't necessarily want to be replaced yourself. So that's kind of the catch with the pipeline. So if you're not moving out of a seat, what does that mean for the people you're trying to level up? What do you think you do? I want to hear some answers.
Question again.
Oh, yeah. So as we're talking about multiplying leadership and bringing people up, if you're not leaving your place of leadership, that stops or bottlenecks the pipeline, right? It stops it up. If you're not leaving, what do you do with the people that are ready to step up to where you're at? Any responses there?
Well, they become stagnant.
They can if they're stuck there.
Or they'll go somewhere else.
They'll go somewhere.
Give them small pieces to do. Let them make announcements in class, or let them lead a small thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give them small tasks.
That's right.
Instead of just turning everything over to them.
That's right. That's part of it. You can do that. So if I'm stopping two or three people that have been leveling up because I don't have anywhere to go either, and I may not want to go anywhere. Maybe I'm right where I need to be, and I have my class. We're going to talk a little bit of this here in a second at the end, but I want you to start thinking about this is the opportunity to take this part of your class or your area and launch things out of it and to say, hey, you're ready to do what I'm doing. You've learned everything you can from me. Our class is strong. We need to multiply out. And you're the person I've been pouring into from doing things like that. I've been giving you the assignments, giving you more and more. We've evaluated. You've been empowered. And so that's where it's time to start multiplying. Because if we don't, the negatives start happening, right? In the back, you said they'll just go away.
They'll find another opportunity, possibly.
And if there's not one, they'll go find another church, right? And so everything you've done to kind of level up that individual will go to another organization, which is a blessing to them, but a loss for us, right? And so we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. So let's not get too deep into that. So an action step here, and we don't necessarily have time right now, so this is something you can do offline as you leave tonight or sometime in the next week. So write down a potential leader's name in your class and plan to engage them in leadership development. And you may already have that person, but you may not have the plan. You may know who and identify that. And y'all may be somewhere in the steps, but that'd be my encouragement to you tonight. So let's jump into event planning. So going to what you said, that's what this is. You know, a lot of times we think about events and we think about the things that we do and we think about the microcosm in which they happen for us in our class. And we forget the opportunities that it gives to empower the people around us. Because sometimes we can hold on to a lot of that planning because we're high capacity leaders and we want to do the things and make sure it's done instead of handing it off to some people around us and multiply it. I've seen Tim showed me the charts and the organizational things that you guys have. And that's fantastic. Put it to work. Hand it off. Multiply these people and empower them. But let's walk through this part really fast because I want to get to the last part before we have to leave this session. So focus on the essentials of this. Define the purpose of the event. Why are we coming together as a Life Bible Study group for this event? What do you think the participants want to walk away with? What do you think they want to do? What do they want to get? Answer that. The class that I'm a part of at First Pensacola, one of the favorite things that we do is quarterly we go to a park called Cowboy Park. Cowboy Park's in the middle of Cordova Park. A lot of parks. We love naming things after parks. And so anyways, our group has about, 30 to 60, depending on when everybody shows up. But we all have tons of kids. So we go to Cowboy Park and we just grill up burgers and hot dogs and we invite other friends. And so generally there'll be 200-300 people that show up at the park. And there's just kids everywhere. It's a nightmare. But we have so much fun. But the whole purpose of that event is just to chill out. It's just to chill out. It's to get outside the walls of the church and do some life together. We all kind of bring, chairs. People sit on the back of trucks. Some people bring blankets. And we all spread out across the pretty sizable park and just have a great time. And it never fails. Most people walk away with a new friend or their children have become friends. And it never fails. After we do those quarterly, people come do what? They come try church for the first time because now their kids want to hang out with the other kids, right? And their other kids told them about the church that they go to. And so it's that small event where we're just saying, hey, we're just hanging out and making friends, turns into something more because it had a purpose. It was focus. Plan for leadership development. Sign roles to develop others. I can't see tonight. Miss Brandy, I think. As Miss Brandy said, you can hand off some small things. And you may think, well, that's pretty trivial for me to ask somebody to bring the drinks or get the ice or do this or that. But to somebody, that may be all the motivation they need to jump into something more. And I know I've been guilty of this before, but we can, as leaders, start complaining that, oh man, I wish people would step up and do some of this as I'm doing all the work, and I haven't asked anybody. It's almost like that suffering servant kind of thing. Like, I'm doing it, Lord, but I'm not willing to ask the people around me to help. And so these people that you're wanting to put in the pipeline, perfect opportunity. In fact, I've seen y'all set up the matrix for this thing. If you're doing this right, some of these people ought to be doing these things anyways. Which what? It encourages that teacher to teach, the director to direct, and everybody in the downlines to do and grow. Gives everybody an opportunity. Simplify the logistics of it. Focus on the who, what, when, where, why. I think something that's gone crazy in our world today is we feel like everything has to have this huge corporate structure. It's got to have themes and it's got to be all kind of matchy and everything else. When at the end of the day, nobody's going to remember half of all that. And so focus on what matters. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a big event. A lot of you probably have big events at like Christmas. That's like usually the time of year when the Bible study groups have their big Christmas parties. That's the time of year to go overboard. But, like going back to the Cowboy Park thing, I remember a time where we didn't even have plates one year. And we had these napkins from Sonny's. Y'all have Sonny's barbecue out here? No, it's not near as good as y'all's. Florida does not know barbecue. And so we're out there with napkins. We don't have plates. We've got, chips, barbecue sandwiches, and, drinks. But you know what? I'm probably one of five that remembers we didn't have plates that quarter, right? And so the event went on. Focus on the people. Focus on what matters. Simplify the logistics. And I tell you what, make sure you get the logistics out well ahead of time. I know for our people, we're mostly a white-collar church. I feel like if I'm getting something on somebody's summer calendar, I need to be 12 to 18 months ahead. It's almost like, hey, let me tell you what we're doing next summer in our Life Bible Study group. But no, honestly, don't pop an announcement of, hey, in 10 days we're going to have this social, and then feel like, man, why didn't anybody catch the vision of that? Cast that vision enough ahead of time. You know how busy your calendar is, and so don't expect everybody else's to be less busy. Evaluate the outcome. Debrief it. Debrief what you did and see what happened. We did an event with our group last year. where we rented out a driving range. We had no idea what we were doing. We're just going to do this thing. It just kind of cobbled together in the leadership team meeting. We rented a driving range, and a couple of the moms said, well, we need something for the kids. So we rented some inflatables. So now we got our inflatables at the driving range. Not in front. Okay, it's behind. And so we're like, well, we need food too. So we bring all this stuff together, and we get out there at the driving range. Fantastic event. Had a lot of people there. It was great. But you know what? Didn't really push us forward. Because it was too much, kind of like what we're already doing with the Cowboy Park thing, and we liked that better. And so we may not do that one again. We evaluated it. It was a great event. So it's important to get together, even in good things. It may not be worth doing consistently, but debrief everything. Because sometimes you'll really find out the true feeling of the group in those things. So here's some good action steps, or one tonight for you. Review your next planned event. Something you already kind of go in the books. I hope you got something on the books. Identify one element to simplify or reframe to support leadership development in it. So let me put that real simple. Find things you're going to do and delegate that out. Learn how to delegate. Here's another thing, part of this. If you don't have something on the calendar or you're kind of stressed about it, look at your church's calendar first. What's the church doing that you can come alongside of and supplement the mission and vision of the overall church or your campus? You know, you may find that, hey, there's something that the church desperately needs to be done at it. Like, say there's an event coming up at the Cypress campus where you're going to have inflatables. Maybe your Life Bible study can say, hey, we're going to man the inflatables. We'll be the help there, and we're going to show up. Would it be all right if we showed up early and had dinner as a Life Bible study group before we worked? Or, you know, find that. So there's ways of taking what you're trying to achieve with the community and putting it in the service. And actually, in the next session, we're going to talk a little bit more about how to do that in the overall church. All right, it's 8:20, and we've got about 10 minutes left to go into this last session. Any questions or anything? I feel like this has been super rapid fire. Tim originally told me like 90 minutes for this, which I think I really didn't hear correctly, because I have like a ton of notes. And then he's like, no, it's more like 30, 45 minutes. I'm like, oh, okay. So I've got more sessions than I really need. This is actually my favorite part of tonight, because honestly, you know, this is the whole reason why we're together. And the verses there, y'all should know them, because this is the mission of your church. Mission of your church is the Great Commission. Go therefore and make disciples of all people. Cast vision for starting new groups. Inspire your class with the why. Multiplication. You know, in the church life, even though segments of it can become very healthy, it can also shine light on the unhealthiness of the organization. Case in point, there's a church in our area in Fort Walton Beach that kind of looking at afar, man, the numbers are looking great. It looks like everything's going well. What was really happening was the youth pastor there was doing an amazing job drawing in a ton of students. And so now a church that was running 250 is now running almost 500, but half of that 500 are students, which, praise God, drawing in a lot of students. But overall, that's showing some unhealthiness. One, they're not assimilating in the families of these students. You know, they're still staying about with what they had. They're just adding in students from the local high schools and middle schools. So they're highlighting some deficiencies there. So you may be looking at your area of the church and think, man, we're just taking off. It's great. We're seeing God move. But you may need to look back and say, okay, what are my leaders saying to me? Or what are they sharing about the overall health of the organization? You know, see, and the reason why I bring that up is multiplication is a way that we help that. You know, because, and this is something a mentor of mine once told me, was I was looking at making a change from one church to the other, and I was really wrestling with it. I felt a release from God to leave, but at the same time, I was really wrestling with leaving the people that were there. And the mentor just simply said, hey, Peter, if this is for you to go do, you'll be disobedient to God by not doing it. Because by not doing it, there is someone else that God has already been training and leading up that's supposed to be going into your space that you're currently in. because God moved somebody else out of the space you're taking. And so if I'm being disobedient and not moving, there's no movement in myself, that other person wouldn't have been able to go and do what God had been preparing him for or her for. And so the same is true with our groups. We're talking about leaders. We're talking about these downlines of people that you've been encouraging, you're empowering, evaluating, and you've been doing all these things, and they're standing there with you. But if there's never a next thing for them to do, they're going to just drift away. Instead, multiply. You know, one of the most frustrating things in the church, I grew up in a medium-sized Southern Baptist church in Mobile, Alabama. And, our youth choir never did anything. Like, we practiced every Sunday. Like, you'd go to church and... I went because the cute girls were in youth choir. Okay, so let's just be honest. But, so we go to church, there's the youth choir, we're singing. And then once a year we went to Six Flags or something. But we never did anything, and it always kind of bothered me. It's like we practice, but the game never comes. So think about that with multiplication. You've got these people, and you've been telling them, jump in the game, do things, lead, take responsibility, be empowered. And then they come to you and say, okay, I want to do all that. And you're like, well, that's great. Just stay right where you're at. Which is fine for a while because people need to grow. But at the end, they need to get in the game as well. Okay, so cast vision. So here's how we can do that. Identify and train the new leaders. So develop the leaders to shepherd the new groups. That's what you're doing. We talked about that. Prepare the group for change. You got to help the members see the benefits. And you got to prepare the group you have. You know, one of the things at First Pensacola we encourage our groups with when we're launching new units is they always understand that they have a time stamp on their group. And that's 1 year from the date of their inception that I or our discipleship pastor, one of us can come to them and say, all right, you ready to multiply? You ready to go? Because the expectation is within the next year to 18 months, they won't be where they're at. In fact, we asked them to put it up on the wall, put the date on the wall. Why? Because it's coming. And we want to start the DNA in the group to know that it is coming. If that's not your DNA, that means you're going to have to take time to start the DNA in it. And I'm telling you right now, sometimes that's hard because we can build kingdoms and we can say, man, look at what God's doing and he's doing it through me and the others here. I really don't want to bust that up. We're dealing with that right now with a group, it's the Williams group at our church. They are 35 to 40 year old marrieds. They went from, it was four or five couples that started it. You know, last Sunday they had 67 couples meeting in a room a little bit bigger than this one. I mean, literally the chairs are like this in the room. I don't even know how they're breathing in there. Okay. I worry about their oxygen. But they're not really interested in dividing. And then they're like, we just really love everybody. We just really love everybody. That's hard to say. We do too, but we really need you to grow. And the other problem is we don't have anywhere to put them. We're out of rooms at that hour too. And so we need them to think about the other Bible study hours and movement between that. And so we came with them and we said, well, hey, what if you start preparing a group now? And what if you did that by starting to offer offshoots of your group on other nights of the week, like Wednesday night? So now their group has a group that meets on Wednesday night that's an offshoot because basically they're a church within our church. So it's kind of been a little bit of a pressure relief valve to get them to kind of just start multiplying a little bit. But their group did not embrace the DNA to begin with. They also grew exponentially really fast. I mean, that growth happened in about 6 months. And so it's kind of a special situation in some ways, that kind of explosive growth. But you got to prepare the group for change. That includes you as well. Launch intentionally. We just talked about that. Start with a small pilot group. No, this is different. I'm sorry. Launch intentionally out of yourself. And so start with that pilot group. You know, start recruiting those people to go with that person. And you know the cool thing that I've always found in these situations is you as the director, you get to become the cheerleader, coach, and all that. And we'll talk about that in a minute for that person. As you're helping them put together the people that will go out and plant that Irwin, you're almost like a church planting coordinator. If you think about it, all right, you're taking this group out of your division, out of your department, and you are coaching them up to go see the success. And I'm telling you, when you see that other group start going and growing, I know we're not supposed to be prideful in Christian life, but there is a sense of pride that just comes with knowing, hey, those servants are over there because I did my job, I empowered others, and I get to see God doing so. It's just a great, amazing feeling to see God's kingdom at work and growing. So keep it going. Support and stay connected. Celebrate and guide the new groups. New groups don't need to be orphaned. I think that's some of the hardest stuff. In fact, the class I was talking about that meets quarterly at the park, you know, we still invite them, some of our offshoots, to come back and do life with us. You know, and you know what ends up happening? They find their own culture. And they say, well, we didn't like that you had barbecue because you always have barbecue. We were really thinking about doing, you know, grilled chicken or something. I don't know, vegan tofu. We're vegan. We want to be the vegan tofu group. And we're like, well, we're not vegan tofu. And so it always happens. The separation starts, and but you don't start them out as orphan groups. And that can work with students. You know, that's the hardest things with students. And then and you go into adults, because students, you're like, okay, you're going to ask friends and people that have been together for years to now go into multiple sixth grade groups or multiple seventh grade groups. And so that's a new kind of reaction there that can be very hard on people in a tough time in their life. You know, Tomas still with fourth graders, and bless his heart. But, you know, and then with adults, you're going to have people that have been, literally, they've been friends or they've been connected. That's why that whole DNA thing's got to be from the beginning there. But celebrate and guide the new groups. Have any of y'all been able to do that with a group where you've kind of been able to celebrate somebody sending out? So we're going to send them out. We're sending the Tomas group out. I don't know why I'm picking on Tomas. And we're going to put on the board, you know, we're going to pray for Tomas. We're going to pray for his wife. We're going to pray for the group going out. You know, we're going to make sure, hey, we've got our next party coming up or our next event coming up. We want to make sure Tomas knows that he can jump in if he wants. Because we want them to succeed. We want them to succeed. So here's an action step. Outline a timeline for mentoring someone to lead a new group. So think about the timeline. What would it take for somebody that you've been working with? And kind of the easiest way to do that is to say, okay, the date they leave, and then work your way back. What is the steps that it takes to go from the day that we send them off out of the class to go start their class? And you have that celebration day where they go and then work your way back. You know, you may have a high capacity leader that's just sitting there that's not producing because they haven't had the opportunity to do it. And so you may be able to take that person and their team and go really fast through it. Or it may be somebody that's really apprehensive. They could do it, but they're apprehensive and they need somebody to give them strength and encouragement. And that process will take longer. And honestly, it's probably going to be different for every person that you work with, because everybody's different and their level for tolerance and going out on their own is going to be different as well. So what would it look like for your life Bible study class to become just a leadership factory or a class factory of just, you know, y'all live in the third or fourth largest city in America. My metro that I live in is 550,000 people. I'm pretty sure I could probably just put that in like a 4-mile range of right here or something like that. Something crazy. I mean, how many people live in the Houston metro?
6 million.
Is it 6 million? Okay, that's more than lives in the state of Alabama, more than live in Mississippi. I think we're 25 million in Florida. Texas is something crazy like 35 million or something like that, 40 million, somewhere around there. And so anyways, you know, both of our states are going to continue to grow. Houston's not shrinking. You're building houses there all over the place. You know, people are moving here. Florida, I think they're saying it's like 1,000 or 2,000 people a day are moving into Florida. And so it's just, and we're filling it in the panhandle, you know. I've lived in the Panhandle area most all of my life, and it's just insane to see the amount of people that are coming. But that's opportunities. So the speaker tonight was right. There's so many opportunities. We can sit here and celebrate what we have, and we should, but there's so many more opportunities. And as God brings us leaders, and that may be somebody that never thought of themselves as a leader, God give us sight that we can see the leaders that we need to give the opportunity to be empowered to go and do the work of ministry. All right, so I'm going to just wrap it up with that, just see what kind of questions you have. It's 8:33. We've got plenty of time. What y'all want to talk about?
I found interesting the part about preparing the group for change. So, how often do you think we should talk about it? Because it's really interesting to just prepare people to formal multiplication.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they get comfortable and then we are not multiplying, which is the reason why we're here, right?
Sure.
So, how often do you think it should be brought up?
Yeah, I mean, if your group's never multiplied, that's the hardest. So if it's existed, you know, and they say that once your group's existed for 5 to 7 years as an established group, it creeps into that closed group because you become very clicked together in life. Nothing wrong with that in a sense. There's nothing wrong with clicking together. I mean, community is what we're saying it's about. But to your point, so if your group's been established for a while, that can be hard. If you've already launched somebody out, that's easy because every week or once a month or so, the interval that works for you and your class, you can say, we're going to pray for these launches that we've done. Another part of that is to think about how many people are not in the class anymore because they're serving other places, because Melody has grabbed 4 of my best couples and taken them to student ministry. So let's pray for them and make sure we invite them back for when we do things. But I think when you kind of take those pieces, it gets people to think, well, our group does multiply out and our group does go and serve and do things. You know, it kind of gets you a little bit more in the barrier of what can we do more. And so I think you guys have to become more of the mindset of the church planner in that way, of thinking about how do I keep before these people this idea of multiplication. And some of that's just having the mission and vision for it. You know, one of the easy low-hanging fruit is the mission of the church. It's Matthew 28, right? They go therefore, make disciples. You know, right? Keep that mission and vision before the people. Yeah.
I would also say, like, getting people to realize what their spiritual gifts are. A lot of people don't realize what they're good at until you put them in a situation, community service, whatever it is.
Sure.
Go to the faith center, you know, do things together. A lot of people don't know like what they're good at until you really kind of challenge them on it or ask them about it, to look at some of those spiritual gift tests and kind of realize, you know, what could be good for them, what type of leadership role would they be possibly interested in.
That's right.
Put in them to really think about it. And I think that's part of the challenge, is just challenging them as a leader.
And that's actually part of my next session. So you can come back and you taught half of my next session right there. Absolutely. If your class isn't serving, get started immediately. And that goes for all age groups. At our church, our student ministry team is on a rotation, you know, so they have a serve night. And, you know, just like you guys were blessed to have a missions building where we feed and do all kinds of things out of. And so, like, last Wednesday night was their serve night. They went down and packed backpacks for a couple local elementary schools. That's what the middle school did. And then the high school packs boxes of food that we'll do at our next food distribution. So they did worship, Bible study, and all that down in our warehouse. They didn't meet in the youth building. They went down to the missions warehouse and did everything down there. Got them out of their comfort zone. They served together and made new memories and kind of mixed it up. What are things y'all want to talk about before we have to go?
So you've got all the things we just kind of talked about are, we've got somebody you've identified as a leader that's in your group, or whatever that looks like. We meet at church, we do Sunday school, we do these kind of different things. And then when, how often, when, how do you find time to teach them the leadership piece when we're not just doing the church kind of pieces in that, and how often do you need to strategically do that and not just be a passing conversation like, hey, great job, and move on?
That's right. Yeah, I think sometimes we overlook the opportunity of just having the interval, and that interval may even just be once a month. Hey, once a month, we're going to meet for coffee or for breakfast before we go to lunch. Some people's intervals line up better than that, and you can kind of meet weekly. I have some people that their interval and their only time really is to just come early, and they'll come onto church campus, they'll find a quiet room, and they'll just have a one-on-one, basically. And they'll use that Sunday morning, you know, they'll just drive separate from their family and just use that once a month or whatever interval as an opportunity. Why? Because probably like you, man, super, you know, super busy, got my job, and now I've got a job that I've taken on at church. Yeah. And so, you know, how do I have the time for that? It is hard. But I think blocking off the time that works for you and the other person and starting that, you know, the other part is we're blessed today to have all this technology. And so, you know, you can do some of this in the car. And, you know, I don't know if you and your other leaders are driving a lot or commuting a lot. We are. So redeem your commute, you know, or redeem some of that time. The other thing is just, you know, clocking in some of these, you know, what is it? You could do like GroupMes or some of these text threads, or, you know, find communication pieces. So like maybe you're only meeting in person once a month to have this discussion, but in the in-between times, there's ways for you to say, I do this all the time with my teams. So I have directors that help me do what I do. And so like my comms team, I'm always throwing out things to them, trying to lead vision and mission through the senior pastor to them. And a lot of that's done by text because they're all 20s. 20-year-olds. None of them want to talk on the phone. None of them want to meet with me. That's fine. You know, the director of communications does, but, you know, I get to pour into our team what we're doing, right? And a lot of them, I'll throw out a question or something that's on my mind or something we see, and they, you know, these part-time, full-time employees get to all have the same opportunity to jump into the conversation, which is really cool because before technology, we would never have been able to have that kind of thing. But that small step gave them an opportunity to kind of lead up a little bit, or at least understand the vision of what I'm thinking and what their boss is thinking, and have some of them and have the opportunity to give input into it. So that's a good question. What time do we need to end?
Think about
now. Okay.
5 minutes from now.
5 minutes 45. From now. 8:45. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm supposed to also give y'all time to tell Tim how bad I did, and so make sure y'all do that. And as you're doing that, what are questions or things you want to cover?
I had a student leadership program.
Yeah.
I had to shut down. I inherited it. And as soon as I did, I saw issues. Like, they weren't being faithful. Their availability was over there, and then even the teachability, like trying to teach them how to do stuff, and then giving them feedback when they weren't doing things wrong, but then following it up with encouragement of this is what you are doing wrong. But then I would get huge emails back on how I was overworking them and I was burning them out.
Yeah.
And I would say, and I had already taken almost everything off of their plate because they would keep complaining to me that they had too much.
Right.
So I would take things off their plate. So then I was doing all of their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, can you give me examples of where you're getting burned out? What is it you're doing?
Right.
And then I would get another huge email just complaining, but never asking my question, answering my question. And it was just constantly like that. And so finally, after a month, I was like, I'm not going to inherit this and keep it. I'm going to shut it down and give it some months where I can put something else together and come back to this.
Yeah.
Where's kind of like a starting point? I mean, obviously, this is great. But in those instances, was that the best decision to make?
Yeah. You know, it's hard to armchair that. I mean, sometimes you just have to. You know, I'm trying to think about some things we've shut down, in our church life. Nothing's coming to mind right now, but I do know we've shut down things in the past. You know, sometimes it's just things like groups just get too stagnant, and we got to have a room. Like, they got a room like this, and they're running 5-7 people in it. I can't do that. And so, you know, I've got to move them and or to ask them to disband so that I can bring in the Williams class that has 67 couples that now needs an opportunity to multiply. So sometimes you just have to drop the hammer on it. I think you just have to go back to your spiritual disciplines on it and put the prayer to it, see where the Spirit's leading. Don't go alone in those decisions. You know, make sure you have the support and understanding of the people around you. It's great you're documenting it. Email's a great form of documentation. I also say, too, like, you know, church life is one of those things, kind of like the country club and some of those other places, where you get very personal about things. Church can become very personal. The things we do becomes personal because our emotions and our affections are tied to it. And so I would also encourage you to, it's good to have email conversations, but just also just taking it into maybe the, like we're doing, getting across the table from them as well. Don't do that alone. Make sure you're bringing some leadership with you. But yeah, so once you do that, I mean, that's the opportunity to whiteboard this and come back and resurrect. I think it's also smart that you gave it time to die.
Yep.
So it's just, you know, just like a farmer, it's got to leave a field fallow so that it can be replanted. You know, sometimes things that die that you move away from, you got to give it time too. So I think you made some good decisions there. And with all of our ministries, you know, there's not a silver bullet for how to do these things. You just take the best practices and put them all into ChatGPT and see what happens. Okay? And so, all right. Well, I think that's about all the time we have. Oh, okay. Yeah. Last question.
Just on evaluations.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if y'all have evaluations. What does that look like? And then as you were talking about it, you know, if you're not getting those evaluations, then it kind of leads to this part where at the very end, you know, everybody's like, what's going on? And so I was wondering, what does evaluation look like for you guys?
Yeah. And to a good point, that probably wasn't happening with this. There probably wasn't people before you evaluating what's happened. So we evaluate a few different ways for Bible study leaders. So these are all non-paid people in our organization. Twice a year, we have large events kind of like this. We have one where we celebrate our workers and one when we kind of drop vision and teaching and equipping, kind of like what y'all are doing tonight, a lot of that kind of vision stuff. And so those happen twice a year. That's also a good opportunity for us to do checkups. Our minister of discipleship, associate pastor of discipleship, like your Tim and his, and his compatriots, they're supposed to meet with their directors every so often to make sure that they're also working with their teachers and to hear feedback. Some of those rhythms are different, but you know, it's supposed to be a regular. We don't have a form. So a lot of it with our volunteers is more of okay, at least once a quarter, have some feedback. I will say in our church culture, we're pretty heavily staffed for our size. And so our ministers and pastors and directors don't sit back. We walk halls, and a lot of it's intentional. And so we're walking around with the intentionality of seeing, okay, who's kind of doing what they're supposed to, who's not. And then when we see things are good and bad, we'll walk in and then report back. So it's kind of case by case.
The reason why I asked,
yeah, what?
I'm about to retire as a teacher and assistant principal right here in this school district. And I just want to see how it looks different from the public school setting in a church setting.
So I would encourage you, my wife's a teacher, I would encourage you to take some of what you know and bring it into the church. Now, some of it you're not going to be able to do because they're not paid, but some of the parts you can, you know. So when I was still the Minister of Education, I would come in and sit in all my classes every year. Now, sometimes I had to do two a week to get to all the adult classes, but I would sit in on them to give them an evaluation, and they would knew that I was there to evaluate them. But I also walked the halls a lot, so they weren't not used to me coming around too. And so and kind of like you with the principal, you're not in there all the whole time. Yeah.
It just seems as this, there's in the public school setting, you bring it into the church and then it's kind of more, a little bit more formal, and it's a lot more grace, let's
yeah.
just say, in the church.
And I would just encourage you, communicate.
Yeah.
Okay. Empower and evaluate. But You've got to have your people understand how much you care for them. You know, even more so. Yeah. All right. Thank y'all for coming.
They're taking us out.